Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go, live in Los Angeles on a Wednesday. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We are on Fox Sports Radio, and we are on FS1. It is great to have you in today. Nick Wright in 30 minutes. Joy Taylor is joining me. More great basketball last night. You know, I was into it because it was Westbrook against Damian Lillard, and that's a little bit of right. They don't like each other much.
I was thinking of you watching the game, watching Westbrook. I'm like, this must be such a new experience for Colin because he's liking how Westbrook is playing now.
Yes, he's played very well. But you know what's interesting in this political season? That campaign donations are important, right? It's hard to win an election if you don't have a lot of money.
Right.
You need money. You need marketing. You need promotion as a politician. But it also helps a lot as an athlete, marketing, promotion. So Westbrook is a Michael Jordan client. Westbrook has been controversial. Westbrook played with a superstar. Westbrook's now on a national team with a national player, James Harden. And there's little old Damian Lillard up in the remote Pacific Northwest. He never has controversy. You know, nobody really talks about him. He's never played with a superstar. He's just rock steady. But you do get, despite all the marketing and promotion for Westbrook, Damian Lillard once again proved last night he's the better player than Westbrook. I mean, forget the stat sheet where Russell Westbrook took 2 3-pointers, missed both, took 12 free throws, made 5, 15 points, and a minus 10 plus minus. Whereas Dame shot 43% on threes, 7 free throws, made 6, 21 points, and a plus 3. We have a lot of examples of these guys facing each other. In fact, 9 times in the last 2 years. Portland won 3 of 4 this year against Houston, and the Blazers beat Oklahoma City and Westbrook last year. In the 9 games, Westbrook is 2-7. Dame is 7-2. Westbrook shoots 40%. Dame shoots 43%. Westbrook shoots 30% on threes. Dame shoots 42.5%. Westbrook is a minus 40. Dame's a plus 49. It ain't close. 9 meetings. Dame's a better shooter, less erratic, more dependable, a better teammate. It is not close. But Westbrook, whoa! You get a lot of whoa! You also get a lot of ugh. Ask yourself this. On the open market, who would swallow Westbrook's contract? A handful of awful teams. Who would, on an open market, make an offer for Dame Lillard? About half the league. One guy is the worst three-point shooter in the bubble. The other now, without Steph Curry, is the best shooter in the bubble. There's only 2 players in the NBA. Steph Curry and Damian Lillard. There's 2 in the NBA. Their shooting range is, oh, look at, they entered the arena. From that point forward, they can shoot from everywhere. That is it. But one guy went to UCLA, played with KD, plays with James Harden, was part of a national team, and one guy went to Weber State, and he's up in Portland, and he makes no news. Even the biggest shot of his life, he just looked at the camera and went, that's Dame, a significantly better player. But the politician that's got more marketing and more promotion and more donations and the bigger budget, I mean, listen, Oklahoma City, if you still think Westbrook's better, Westbrook left OKC. The team got better. How? I mean, every player that's left Westbrook, who, by the way, has played very well until last night in the bubble, every player that's left him has improved. Guys have become all-stars. So think about this. Westbrook's never won a playoff series in his life when he was the best player. Dame won 2 last year. Last year, 2, as the best player. In the last couple of years, only 4 guys in the NBA have made first-team All-Pro and second team. I'll read them to you. Harden, Giannis, KD, and Damian Lillard. But you go to Weber State, you're not controversial, you never play with a star, you're up in the Rose City in the corner of the country. You're competing against a $500 million candidate that's got nothing but corporate backing and national backing and national marketing. Once again, they played last night. Who's better? I don't think it's an argument anymore. Last nine games, it is not close. All right, so, what a tremendously big moment last night in the NBA. This is the shot heard round Orlando. Here it is, the always entertaining Phoenix Suns and Devin Booker.
They bring the double at Booker. Book on the spin, fires for the win! Got it!
Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know, now you do.
Shocker, the team that hasn't cared about the regular season all year, the Clippers, doesn't care about the regular season, even in the bubble. This is big for Phoenix. They're 3-0 in the bubble. They're fighting for a playoff spot. It's a fun story. Phoenix is a really good NBA town. It's one of those NBA towns. They love their basketball. They've had bad basketball for several years. But it's a fun story for Phoenix. It means nothing for the Clippers. I mean, the Clippers this year have told us time and again. They got beat by 26 by Memphis this year in the regular season. Clippers did. They got beat by Sacramento twice. They got beat by Phoenix now twice. They lost to Chicago and Atlanta and awful Minnesota. They don't care. And the reason they don't care is because the man who owns the team is a get-it guy, Steve Ballmer. Steve Ballmer was at Microsoft in Seattle. And his entire time there, who did they battle? Apple and Steve Jobs. They write books about those relationships. Gates, Ballmer, Paul Allen against Steve Jobs. And when you're battling somebody that big, you got to have a better product. You need wins, big wins, not subtle wins and nuance. So Ballmer's been in this battle when he bought the Clippers. And he was now in a city with his Apple, the Lakers. And the Lakers, their gear is all over Los Angeles. It is hard to find a Clipper hat. And think about this. How do you catch up? One way. Get your own building and win championships. It's not about being better than the Lakers. Before this year, the Lakers, six straight losing seasons. The Clippers have been very good for 6 years and very exciting. Hard to find a Clipper hat in town. The one time in New York where the Mets were better than the Yankees, two things happened. The Yankees were awful in the 80s, and the Mets went out and got stars and won a title, a World Series title. And for a brief time, it was a Met city. The Mets didn't get the city because they had, like, guys that hustled. No, they had Keith Hernandez. They had stars. They had Doc Gooden, Daryl Strawberry. They stole the tabloids in the back page, and they won a World Series. You got to do both. So Steve Ballmer, who is now going to build a new arena, went out and got Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. To get him, he had to clear some space. And then he got a star coach, you know, Doc Rivers, star coach. Like, he's got all of it working here. I got Doc Rivers when I get here. Okay, he's a star coach. Now I got to get a couple of star players. This is what you do. He does not care about the regular season. He doesn't care. They've had the better regular season before this year than the Lakers for six straight years. You still can't find a Clipper hat in town. The way the Mets did it was stars and titles. That is it. You're not beating Apple up at Microsoft because you got a better mouse. That's not going to do it. You got to come out and beat them on a massive product. And so the Clippers do not care about the regular season, nor should they. The only way to shift this paradigm in Los Angeles, like the Mets briefly did, stars, younger stars, and championships. Getting to the Western Conference Finals is not enough. It's simply not enough. So the Clippers are going to be more rested. They're already deeper. They've got the star coach. And by the way, we're in a bubble. There's no home court advantage anyway. So it doesn't even matter. So when I watched Phoenix win last night, I'm very happy for Phoenix. It's a terrific NBA town. They're 3-0. They're playing hard. And it's great to see this bubble where these you know, borderline teams like Phoenix, they are, this is March Madness, man. They are, it is, you can sense the intensity, the sudden death feel to it. But the Clippers have been telling us all year, not really into it. So they're now into it in a bubble. By the way, the good news, Hot Wings Williams, Lap Dance Lou, did play last night. He did. We can call him either. It's either I like Lap Dance Lou, Joy likes Hot Wings Williams.
Shannon said Lemon Pepper Lou, which I think is
we got the third one.
It's pretty good.
Pretty good stuff. All right, coming up, it is now funny. See, I love when you have these star players. And, you know, remember when LeBron left Cleveland for the first time? It was after he went to the Olympics. And I always theorized that LeBron went to the Olympics, you know, after 7 years in Cleveland. He went to practice with, you know, like really good players. And, you know, once you eat at a nice restaurant, it's hard to go down. Once you fly in a nicer airline, first class, it's harder to go coach. Once you stay in a Four Seasons, it's harder to go to Motel 6. Once LeBron actually, like, went to the Olympics and played with the world's best basketball players, it was hard to go back to those old Cav teams. That's when he said, I want to play with Bosch. I want to play with Ray Allen. I want to play with D-Wade. And coming up next, interesting to watch what's happening with Brady in Tampa and some of the comments being made by brand new teammates to Tom Brady. Really good stuff.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So LeSean McCoy is very, very good and very good player. And the Bucs picked him up, played with Kansas City last year. Good situational running back, adds to their running back depth, which is kind of a weakness for Tampa last year. And LeSean McCoy has been very talkative in regards to Tom Brady. He admits the weather and Tom Brady. That's why I came. And here yesterday he was talking about the early practices so far with the GOAT, Tom Brady.
To actually see him work, I mean, he's like a general, you know, leading the troops, you know, teaching them what he wants in the routes, things like that. He looked real good. I mean, and as he's throwing the ball, you know, I hear a couple of guys whispering like, dang, how many years do you think he'll play? And that's how good he looked, seriously.
To really construct an opinion on Tom Brady in Tampa, you have to go back to last year because outside of that town, nobody watches them. Nobody watches Tampa. They don't show up on national TV games. Even in their own division, Atlanta and Cam Newton for years and Breeze and the Saints are much bigger TV draws. I mean, it's a college football town, mostly. Not anymore. But let's go back to last year where Tampa was fairly predictable. Bruce Arians, head coach, Todd Bowles, defensive coordinator, were in their first year. It's a very young roster. Predictably, they were bad in the first half of the season, 2-6 in the first 8. Young roster, new system, new coaches. Let's start, though, November 10th on a Sunday against Arizona. From that point forward, the second half of the season, the part Belichick always says really is the season, no experimenting now, new coach, new defensive coordinator, new team. Now guys are 8 games in with an exhibition season, and they were 5-3, won all 3 road games, and defensively top 2 or 3 team in the league with key analytic stats. Their only losses were to the division champion Saints, the division champion Texans, and an overtime loss to Atlanta. Shocker, Jameis Winston threw a pick 6 in OT. This was an above average team down the stretch that only needed an adult at quarterback. Now they've added Tom, maybe the best blocking tight end in Gronk. LeSean McCoy at running back. Upgraded right tackle, which was the offense's weakness. And, oh, by the way, Bruce Arians and Todd Bowles in their second year. And this should be noted because schedules matter. They get a massive schedule break. Every schedule, this is a team that's going to score a lot of points. Pro Football Focus has them with the 5th best roster in the sport. They've got 6 games I would call go-either-way games. Denver, Chargers, Packers, Rams, Chiefs, Vikings. These are really good teams. 5 are at home. And Green Bay, they get 10 days to prepare. That is a huge scheduling break. You're not winning that game at Arrowhead. It'll be hard enough to win it in Tampa. You're not winning it in Arrowhead. Oh, it's in Tampa. They got to go to Denver. Then their last 5 go-either-way games are all at home. Chargers, Packers, Rams, Chiefs, and Vikings. I mean, that November 29th game in Kansas City, blowing sideways, you're not winning that game. Down in Tampa, you got a shot. So I said it yesterday, Baltimore and Tampa Bay would not shock me one bit if they ended up playing in Tampa, the site of this year's Super Bowl. Joey Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, the Lakers have been successful on the court since the NBA restarted, clinching the top seed in the West. But off the court, LeBron is still working through one big challenge of being in the bubble.
Obviously, being away from your family is an unbelievable sacrifice that we're all making. And it's very, very difficult. Nothing has ever compared to this. So it's a huge sacrifice that we're all making. I miss the hell out of my family, my wife, my kids, my mother, and so on and so on. So, you know, it's a huge challenge.
So he got there on July 9th, so he's been in the bubble for 4 weeks. Family and friends aren't allowed in the bubble until the second round of the playoffs, which is scheduled to start on August 31st. Family can arrive on the 30th, so essentially it would be basically another month before anyone can come into the bubble during the second round of the playoffs. This is something that concerned me from the beginning talks of having the bubble, that it can go either way, right? Like, we were a little concerned about some of the single guys being able to deal with not, you know, breaking the bubble, right, or trying to sneak anyone in. But I thought more overwhelmingly it was going to be much more stressful for guys that have families and kids.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, in America right now, there's 15 to 20 million Americans that have somebody in a nursing home in their family, and you can't go visit them.
Right.
So, I mean, this is...
And you're dealing with the constant anxiety of that is an extremely dangerous place,
yeah, I mean,
for someone
kinda,
who's vulnerable to be right now.
This is the new America. There's a lot of this separation happening in America. The good news is most of these athletes are in incredible shape. Their families are healthy. But this is something I think everybody's battling.
Well, I do think it's very important that they are letting family and friends in once you hit the second round of the playoffs. We are not realizing this or thinking about this right now, but a lot of these teams are going to start going home. Like,
right,
once the playoffs start,
I mean,
there's going to be a significant amount of teams going home.
Eight.
And then, yes, and then as the playoffs commence and you lose, you go home.
Yeah.
So it's not like there's going to be this many people in the bubble as they start bringing family and friends in, which is, I'm sure, why they designed it that way. And, of course, they have to be quarantined. But this is a big stress factor. I mean, being away from your family, especially, it's a very stark contrast because we were just quarantined for months. So you've been with your family, spending an unusual amount of time with them, to now going to being completely away from them. So I understand that the emotional and mental stress this adds. And I do think this will eventually play a factor as you get into the later rounds of the playoffs. Right now, obviously, you know, they kind of just got there, so they're mentally preparing for a long run, especially teams like the Lakers and Clippers and ones that we're expecting to be in the championship. But I do think it will eventually play a role. So the Heat were without Jimmy Butler, who was out with right ankle soreness yesterday, but they still beat the Celtics. Bam Adebayo stepped up in Butler's absence with 21 points and 12 rebounds. Duncan Robinson also had 21 points, and Goran Dragic also added 20.
What a horrible loss for the Celtics. Horrible loss for them.
I agree. Bad loss for the Celtics. Great win for the Heat. And they didn't lose. They, you know, got a regular season win against the Celtics.
If Jason Tatum doesn't play really well, I mean, Boston doesn't have a ton of size. That's why they don't match up with Milwaukee. I watched the second half of this game. They just couldn't make stops. You know, they just couldn't make a stop. And if Jason Tatum doesn't play spectacularly well, there are times this team gets stagnant offensively, and that's what a really good coach.
They also are extremely dangerous when they get hot because they have really great three-point shooters, Duncan Robinson being one of them. They never trailed in the 112-106 win.
Look how small Boston looks. This is why they don't match up with Milwaukee. They look so small at times.
Well, this was also a significant win for the Heat as well because Jimmy Butler wasn't out there. So the ball movement was great. You saw what Spoelstra's able to do with this young team and building a culture that you don't have Jimmy Butler out there and you're still able to get a big win over the Celtics. The lead for the 3 seed in the East is cut to 1.5 games now. Goran Dragic unfortunately left the game at the very end. He has a slight sprain to his ankle, which is not great news for the Heat, but it's not, you know, it's not tremendous, so hopefully he'll be back out there soon. But I thought this was, I mean, again, I sat on the couch and watched basketball all day yesterday. I thought that was a great win, great team win for the Heat. Finally, Derek Carr has a chip on his shoulder as he enters the 7th season as Raiders quarterback. And when he was asked if he considered opting out this year, he said he has too much on the line in 2020 to do that.
I have a lot to prove to myself. I have a lot to prove to my organization. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I'm tired of being disrespected.
Ooh.
So there was no question I was going to play this year.
Woo!
Excuse me.
So the question is, how much should we respect him? We're going to do a blind resume game later with Derek Carr. Because the question becomes, he's ticked off. Right. I like him more than everybody else. I put him in that like 12th, 13th best quarterback. I like him significantly. I think most people think he's somewhere in the middle of the pack. I think he's a, you can make an argument. His issue is it's a Kirk Cousin thing. A lot of times he just doesn't let it rip. He just does not let it go. He doesn't want to throw picks. But I like him. I think he's got a lot of Tony Romo in him, athletically and accuracy-wise. I like Derek Carr.
I like Derek Carr, too. I think where it went wrong for Derek Carr was the injury in the playoffs.
Yeah.
He was trending upwards, and that was devastating. It sort of derailed everything. And now we kind of look at him as a, you know, middle-of-the-pack quarterback. I think he has the potential to do more. But
when you watch these highlights,
what is his ceiling?
When you watch these highlights, he moves well. I'm telling you, there's a lot of Romo here.
I like Derek Carr.
He throws a really accurate ball on the run. He's always been Romo to me. I don't think he's quite as athletic, but when I watch him, I see Romo.
I see Joe Burrow, by the way. Spicy of him, though. Your comp for Joe Burrow was Tony Romo.
Yeah, and I think Romo and Joe Burrow are probably a little more athletic than Derek Carr, but this is what Burrow looks like. He moves. Burrow can throw on the run. He can throw static in the pocket. Derek Carr is not – if you told me Derek Carr or Kirk Cousins, a lot of people would take Cousins. I'd probably lean Derek Carr on that.
I think I would go with Derek Carr, too. Yeah. This is very Raider-like, though. He's tired of being disrespected.
Yeah,
he's getting a little spicy.
Look at this throw. Boom, bullet right there. It's like my old high school tape. It looks exactly like it. Enjoy it with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
I mean, poor Nick Wright today. Once again, last nine times Damian Lillard has faced Westbrook, it's been humiliating for Westbrook. And once again, the better player surfaced with a W last night. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. I want to hear this. So, all right, Mr. Westbrook in Houston. I mean, nine times they've met in the last 2 years. It's seven wins for Dame.
I'm already annoyed.
I mean, it's incredible. I mean, what more do you need?
Okay. Listen, I don't know why you insist on doing this. My guess is you're just obfuscating to try to avoid giving Carmelo Anthony his due after you've crushed Syracuse legend, greatest U.S. Olympic basketball player of all time for the better part of 10 years. But let's do this. Let's talk Russ and Harden. Because one's the ninth best player in the world. Russ and Lillard. One's the ninth best basketball player in the world. One's the 11th best basketball player in the world. It's very, very close. But I think this year is a great example as to why it's totally legitimate to hold Russ in equal, if not higher, esteem than Dame. Dame dealt with injuries this year around his team did. They didn't have their full roster, didn't have a ton of talent. How'd that work out for him? Because they were 8 games under 500 headed into the bubble. When Russ had KD leave, what did he do? He put a team on his back, averaged a triple-double the first of 3 straight years, and carried them to the playoffs. Now, if you're making the argument, if you have a stacked roster who would better contribute to winning, you can make that argument for Dame. But to me, I'm going to use two of my media mentors, one from younger in life and one from right now. Who's the better broadcaster? Bob Costas or Colin Cowherd?
Bob.
Well, I guess it depends on what you're trying to do. Right. If you're hosting the Olympics, with respect to you, Colin,
yeah,
I'll take Bob.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I got 3 hours and a microphone and a new network, I'll take you.
Yeah.
So there you go. Exactly. So if you're going to have a stacked roster, maybe Dame's efficiency wins out. But if you need someone to take on the workload himself and make sure you're never a 30-win team as the Blazers were pacing to be, well, then maybe Russ is the answer.
So the Clippers lost last night, and I could literally, as I'm watching it, I'm thinking, oh, Nick literally went and got a second Bud Light. He is having the time of his life, and to this I say, the Clippers lost to Minnesota, Chicago, Atlanta, Phoenix, Sacramento twice. They lost to Memphis by 26. They didn't care about the regular season in L.A. They sure as hell don't care about it in the bubble. Like, this is who they are, right? Like, we know they don't care about that game against Phoenix.
Man, I can't imagine. What a wonderful life your amazing children must have had whenever they bring home a test. If they get an A, they were trying, and if they failed, well, they must not, they didn't care about it. Like, either way, they win. It's just great. If you operate under the premise of whenever a team loses, they didn't care, well, then every team's awesome. And my question would be, when are you going to start caring? Like, if you didn't care, maybe don't play Kawhi 37 minutes, which for him is essentially two games worth of playing. If you don't care, maybe don't rush Lou Williams back when he's fresh off his trip to the strip club in the wings. Like, but he did play. You're a team built to stop perimeter scoring, and a perimeter scorer dropped 35 on your head, primarily guarded by your future GOAT Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Like, at some point, the warning signs have to matter. And I guess they're not going to matter for America until the Clippers are down 3-2 in the second round of the playoffs. And it's like, oh, wait, they didn't care in the regular season. So they didn't build chemistry. They didn't flush out their rotation fully. They didn't ever get an answer for a real interior rim protector. And so why they've been treated like, look, even at the end of the game, it's like, how did they get back in the game? Paul George airballs a three that Kawhi's lucky enough to get the rebound for. Like, they're a good, not great team that's been anointed for reasons I will never understand, and people aren't going to believe it until they're going home sometime probably before the conference finals.
Well, we disagree there. So I'm watching last night. They put the standings up. They put the standings up in the West, and you know, the East doesn't matter because somebody from the West will win it. So they put the standings up in the West, and Memphis just lost one of their better players a couple days ago, Jaren Jackson. So Memphis is in big trouble.
Jaren Jackson.
Yeah, he's out. So he's their second-best player to Ja Morant. So they got troubles. And Portland now, Nurkic is back. Melo's playing very well. I acknowledge it took him 36 years old, but he finally decided to get on a treadmill. And the point being is that let's be honest about this. When's the last time you looked, Portland's going to be the 8, L.A. the 1? You have to acknowledge, this is probably the most dangerous 8 seed. Now with no Avery Bradley for the Lakers or Rondo, that's a frightening first round for the Lakers, right?
Well, listen, of the possible 8 seeds, I think Portland could be the most dangerous, well, the most problematic, if you will. New Orleans also, by the way, New Orleans might steal this thing. Their last 5 games, you should pull it up. I think it's twice against Sacramento. They get Washington. I think they get Orlando and San Antonio. I think that's their last 5. They could go 5-0 now that Zion's playing. But here is the problem for Portland in a first-round series against the Lakers. If you were to line up all 30 teams in the NBA and say front of the line, who is the roster most equipped to slow down LeBron? Front of the line probably be the Clippers because they have Kawhi and Paul George, Marcus Morris. They build their team around that. The very last team in line would not be the Knicks, would not be the Hawks. It would be Portland now that Trevor Ariza is not in the bubble. They do not have a single person who can guard LeBron. Their starting lineup, I guess it would be Carmelo Anthony, who I know you think so highly of now. They coming off the bench. Gary Trent Jr. has been a revelation three-point shooting-wise. He can't guard LeBron. They don't have a single person on their roster to guard LeBron to even slow him down. And so, while, yeah, the Lakers would, I'm sure, prefer to face the Suns or the Kings and have an easy 5-game sweep, LeBron's clearly easing himself into the bubble. And if you want him to be up and running by round 2, give him Portland in round 1. He'll average 35 a game in that series because they got no answer for him whatsoever. So that's the long way of saying they don't scare me. Could it be a gentleman sweep instead of a sweep? Sure. But they just, the lack of Ariza kills them as far as even having a single person to throw at LeBron James.
So years ago when LeBron went from Miami to Cleveland again, he moved off of Andrew Wiggins. They had a chance to draft Andrew Wiggins, but the word was that LeBron didn't like Wiggins because he didn't have any dog in him. He wasn't going to be that. And for the record, sure, LeBron's been right. I believe that dog is developed, you know, somewhere between 7 years old and 12. And if you don't have it, you don't develop it. I mean, if you take Magic and LeBron's DNA, it's been leadership first day in the league. If you take the late Kobe and MJ's relentlessness, obsessiveness, it starts in childhood on, first day in the league. Anthony Davis is talented. Nick, he disappears in fourth quarters. He shoots like 40% this year in the fourth. He doesn't have any dog in him, and that's what wins in the postseason. Aren't you a little concerned? Four times against the Clippers, he evaporated in the fourth.
And despite that, listen, the Lakers were tied with 6 minutes left first game of the year. Second game of the year against the Clippers, it comes down to a ridiculous overturn call on LeBron's potentially game-tying shot, and they won the next two. I would be concerned if Anthony Davis had to be your best player, but he doesn't. And he is a way overqualified Robin. And so what you're going to have is Anthony Davis playing the biggest games of his life. Anthony Davis has some of, I'm sure, the biggest failures and successes he's ever had in the NBA in these playoffs. And I think he'll come out on the other side a champion and a changed player. But when you have America, I guess, and I wouldn't think you would be part of it, has forgotten the single most reliable thing in sports is LeBron James in the playoffs over the last decade. What he gives you night in, night out. The last time we saw him in the playoffs, he carried an atrocious Cavs team to the finals, culminating in the 51-point performance in game one before he broke his hand out of frustration. Like, you don't need Anthony Davis to take over in the fourth because LeBron will do that. And I think Anthony Davis maybe has a little more dog than you're giving him credit for, but I think whatever it is, he will learn and gain so much from this deep championship playoff run that in the years to come, he'll be able to be that fourth quarter guy that right now the Lakers are relying on LeBron to be.
Yeah, I was going to ask you a question about the Buccaneers, but you have disagreed with me on everything. There's no chance I think it's funny. I was saying this about Tampa Bay. Last year was very predictable. Young roster, new coach, new coordinator. I love their defensive coordinator and their head coach. They were bad early, 2-6. In the second half of the season, the young roster, they were 5-3 and really only lost, were beaten by the Saints and the Texans. Those are very good teams with quarterbacks with some real star power. I look at this Tampa team and I think Todd Bowles second year, Arian second year, maybe the best blocking tight end, Tom. I look at Tampa today and I think, I start looking around the NFC, everybody's got a hole. Can Carson Wentz stay healthy? Russell Wilson's basically bailing out bad line play. Aaron Rodgers, do we know what Matt LaFleur can do? Can you at least acknowledge Tampa's going to be a playoff team with Brady? They're going to be a playoff team.
Well here's – I'll go a step further and not quite as far. Tampa has – listen, last 6 weeks of the year they had a top five defense. I like Arians and Leftwich. I agree with you entirely on that. Gronk will be good for them even if he's not vintage Gronk. They might have, certainly it's in the argument, the best pair of receivers in football. And they improved the offensive line. So the question just is, Colin, are the Buccaneers a quarterback away from being a Super Bowl contender? They thought so. And so they think they brought that quarterback in. I think Tom Brady's 43 years old, and we have seen significant deterioration each of the last 3 years, from MVP to good but not great to downright bad last year. If Tom Brady is what you and many others think he will be this year, the Bucs can win 11, 12 games and can be a Super Bowl contender. But if they're not, it will be because of Brady. Because I agree with every point you make. They have flushed out this roster. The defense surged at the end of the year. They're not going to be kneecapped by interceptions like they were last season. So, yeah, let's just see what, Tampa Bay can do. And I'm excited to see it. Maybe I'll be wrong. I got nothing against Brady. I think he's got some curious choices in his social group and friends. But aside from that, I got no problem with Brady. I want to see him do it, and we'll be able to see because he's on an excellent roster. I agree with you there.
Look at him. He looks 31 years old. His body shape, he's just very, very good. Listen, you and I don't agree on a lot. We don't. Our lifestyles are different.
Yeah.
Our what we at night, what we drink is different. Some guys. I go to bed early.
Did you finish that? Did you drink that bottle of tequila I left you?
I had a small.
I left
sip.
You an unopened bottle. that's a lie. By the way, I'm glad you're incorporating into the show all-time Chiefs great and champion LeSean McCoy. I assume he'll go into the Hall of Fame as a Chief, since that's who he won a Super Bowl with. Just had to fit that in.
Get out of here. Nick Wright, first things first. Good seeing you,
buddy.
See ya. Coming up next, the blind resume on Derek Carr. He wants respect, so we'll just play the game. I don't know the answer to this. My staff's going to play the game with me. We're going to play this game together. How good is Derek Carr? Blind resume. I do not know the quarterbacks they're going to put up against him. So we're going to play this game next with the Raiders, Derek Carr. The Las Vegas Raiders, Derek Carr.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Getting older, harder to get out of bed, putting on unwanted weight. There's a way to solve it, to get more lean and recapture that energy. MDriveForMen.com. Rite Aid has it. So does Vitamin Shoppe, Walgreens, MDriveForMen.com. So Derek Carr, the Raiders, they're moving to Vegas, and he's moving in the direction of stop bad-mouthing me. Derek Carr, as camp opens, says, I want more respect.
I have a lot to prove to myself. I have a lot to prove to my organization. I'm going to be completely honest here. I'm tired of being disrespected. So there was no question I was going to play this year.
Okay, so the question begs, how much respect does he deserve? So we invented something. It had never been done before in the history of the world called blind resume. I doubt it had ever been done, but we're taking credit for it. So this way, it takes out all the bias. You just get numbers, and you have to make a decision on what's better. And it's amazing how often you get fooled on this when you don't bring in your bias of your favorite quarterback who plays for a team you hate or a team you like. So let's do the blind resume on Derek Carr. How much respect? I like him more than most, but I said blind resume, I'm going to take out all my bias on this. His brother comes on the show. I've had Derek on the show. So let's put it up. Blind resume. So on the left is Derek Carr. 90 touchdowns, 37 picks, 15,000 passing yards. These are the last 4 years of Derek Carr. That's a real timeline, last 4 years. Would you take Derek Carr or the quarterback on the right? The numbers are, I mean, they're basically the same. I get a slightly higher passer rating, so I'd probably go quarterback on the right because the passer rating does matter. Who's the quarterback on the right? I have no idea. All right. Okay. There you go. Isn't it amazing?
I love this game.
Okay, so it is Dak Prescott.
Okay.
So the quarterback in the right. It's amazing. So the quarterback in the right had 7 more TDs and a higher passer rating. All right, let's do it again. All right. This is just last season. Last year, Derek Carr, 21 TDs, 8 picks, 4,000 yards. Completion percentage is unbelievable, 70%. Passer rating of 100. So the guy on the right for our radio audience, a few more touchdown passes, yards are the same, but a significantly lower completion percentage, 60%, and a passer rating high 80s. I would take Derek Carr over this quarterback. The quarterback is.
I knew it.
Tom Brady.
I knew it.
Okay, this just goes to show you. So how much respect? So we would take Dak over him. But he was way better than Brady last year. And by the way, Brady had a much better defense. And when most of us believe Belichick's the best coach ever. So we're going to do it one more time. All right, Derek Carr, this is career now. So we went 4 years last year, now career. Completion percentage for Derek Carr is 64% for our radio audience, 7 yards an attempt, passer rating at 91, and a touchdown percentage. What is that again? Touchdown percentage is percent of your throws that end up touchdowns, 4.3. So the blind resume on the right has a slightly lower completion percentage, a slightly higher yards per attempt, a lower passer rating, and the same touchdown percentage. So let me look at this. I would probably take... I think I would take Derek Carr because the pass...
Because I know how this game works, I think I know who...
Okay, I'll take Derek Carr.
Oh, no. Okay. I was fooled.
Marcus Mariota. But boy, they're dead even.
Yeah, but I'm definitely taking Derek Carr over Marcus Mariota.
So now when you talk about Derek Carr, blind resume Dak, blind resume him over Brady, blind resume really dead even with Marcus Mariota. So I'm as confused now as I was 5 minutes ago.
Exactly. As amazing as that soundbite is, I don't disagree with him. I do think Derek Carr gets disrespected a lot.
No.
He's not a bad quarterback.
No, he's not bad at all. Oh, hell no, he's not bad at all.
I do think he gets disrespected.
Do-it-yourself projects. Go to Lowe's.com. Everything you need to create your own sanctuary at home. I have built a bar cart. Makes the games, makes that nightly beer or two more enjoyable. Hashtag Lowe's Goals.